Good morning, welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 23rd Perek, Perek Chav Gimel of Sefer Shmuel Beis. We're coming really towards the end of this, and this Perek has a few interesting things. It's really divided into three separate sections. Section number one is David's last soliloquy, it's his last speech, what is termed Divrei David HaAchronim. And he gives this beautiful speech. He calls himself David ben Yishai, Nu'uma Gever, who come on Mashiach Elokei Yaakov, the one who has been established as the Messiah of the children of Jacob, Unim Zmiros Israel, the one who sings the songs of Israel. And then he gives this beautiful section of a song, which is from Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Zion, worth looking at and seeing inside. The general theme of it is, as pointed out by the Meforshim, and is pretty explicit in the words, is David HaMelech talking about how Hashem chose him to be this leader and how he did it. And how Hashem destroyed his enemies because he trusted in Hashem. Very, very strong descriptions, just to give you one pasuk, to give you a sense of how much David HaMelech realizes his own sense of self. He says, Omar Elokei Yisrael, Li Diber Tzur Yisrael, Hashem the God of Israel, turned to me and spoke to me and said to me, Moshel Ba'adam Tzadik, you should be a righteous leader among humanity, Moshel Yiras Elokim, one who rules with Yiras Elokim, with fear of heaven. Very clearly, David HaMelech realizes his own status, and he also understands that Hashem is leading him the whole way and will take care of his enemies, and this seems to be what it is. Why is it that this is separate from the song? Why did David HaMelech not include this in the song? The Radak points out that this was after the song. This is really David HaMelech's last prophecy. This is almost his sign-off, his prophetic sign-off to the Sefer. The next two sections of the Perek really deal with David's Giborim. We're going to deal with a narrative, a story which happens. But before we get into the story, just an overview of the structure of this last area is that David HaMelech describes three Giborim, three strong men, then three generals that he has. Then he adds on Benayahu ben Yehoyada, who is not included in the three strong men, not included in the three generals. The three generals include Avishai, who is of course the son of Tzeruiah. He does not mention the other two, but we can assume that it must have been Yoav and somebody else who's in that group, probably Amasa. And Benayahu. Benayahu is said to be close to the three, but not quite part of the three. And the end of the Perek describes another 30 Giborim. We'll call it, you know, tier three of David's Giborim, of his warriors. In that group, of course, you know, when you read through that list, you will see some familiar names like Asael, who's the third brother of Yoav and Avishai. We see in this list, of course, Uriah Hachiti. Oh, that was Bathsheba's husband, who he sent off to the battlefront. We see also in this list Eliam, who is the father of Bathsheba, the son of Achitophel. So we see a lot of interesting names in this list. So we have 3, 3, 1, and 30. That's the sort of pattern of this Perek in terms of 37 Giborim in different tiers of strength. There's metaphoric descriptions about each of them. You know, for Ben Yoyada, we have this description of how he kills Yorad v'hiko esa aryeh b'soich habor b'yom ha-sholeg. He goes down to the pit and kills the lion in the pit on the snowy day. Clearly referring to something much more than the pshat over here, but nonetheless, there's these beautiful hyperbolic descriptions of the power that these men had. And lastly, we're going to focus on a story which deals with the first of these three Giborim. David HaMelech describes these people. Their names are Adinoi Ha'etzni, Elazar ben Doidai, and Shama ben Agei Harari. Those are the name of these three Giborim, names we've not heard necessarily beforehand, but and it describes how each of them, how powerful they were. Like Adinoi killed 800 people at one shot. You know, Shama ben Agei, when he was faced to the Philistines, you know, he was able to, he escaped and he saved the Israel battlefront. I mean, beautiful descriptions of each of what these people did. Now, the actual story that occurs is David HaMelech is caught in a siege. He's in the area of the Ma'aras Adulam, the cave of Adulam. And the Pelishtim are encircling him on all sides. They're holding the front of Bethlehem, of Beis Lechem. And he says, David HaMelech says, oh, I wish I could drink something. I wish I had waters from the spring in the gates of Bethlehem, of Beis Lechem. And these three warriors break through the Philistine battlefront, go get the water and bring it back to David HaMelech. And when David HaMelech gets it, he didn't want to drink it. He said, how could I take water, which was taken the threat of the blood of these three warriors? And David HaMelech uses it as a nesach. He brings it as an offering to Hashem. Very strange story. What is really going on over here? So level number one to think about, Yigal Ariel has a very beautiful insight over here, which is that what David HaMelech, if you think back to David HaMelech's childhood, where did David HaMelech grow up again? He grew up in Beis Lechem, in the fields of Bethlehem. What's David Melech doing? He's sitting in the battlefront. You can imagine fires all around him, arrows flying, you know, the sound of people, the wounded crying. And David Melech's in this battlefront, in war after war after war. And David Melech says, "What I would give to drink the waters of Bethlehem." What he's saying is, I remember when I was a simple shepherd boy, sitting on the side of the field, in the sunshine as the wind rustled through the undergrowth, and I could sit there drinking from the simple spring of Beis Lechem. What David Melech is saying is, what I wouldn't give now to be back then, before all this carnage, before this battle, before doing all this necessary to be a king. David Melech lapses back, and his giborim are so concerned about David Melech. They think that this perhaps might be a paralysis that's taking over David Melech, which is why they show, they display their strength, they run through the battlefront to go get it for David. And David is disappointed. He doesn't want to have risked their lives. Therefore, he sacrifices to Hashem. That's on a pshat level of reading this. Another thought that might just occurred to me when looking at the story, is that David HaMelech is displaying might over here. What these Giborim are doing is displaying might. You know what? They don't control Beis Lechem right now. But you know who's the sovereign control of Israel? Is B'nai Israel. And we're going to show you whether you control it or whether you control, or whether you're the Waqf controls Temple Mount, we will still enter when we want. And therefore, you can have your war front at Beis Lechem. We will walk through you when we decide to, because we control this land. That's what David HaMelech might also be displaying. Third level, which is the drash. The drash over here is so completely different to the story itself, it's almost remarkable. The David HaMelech, the Gemara is describing this in Baba Kamet of Samach Amabeis to Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, and says that this was actually an intellectual question. David HaMelech was actually asking a halachic question. The question he was posing to his men, there were two options as to what the question could be, but they seemed to be very halachic oriented questions, unrelated to the battle. Question number one is that David HaMelech was asking his three Giborim to go and find the answer for him, which they needed to go out and derive from the wells of Beis Lechem, was what happens if the following scenario. Usually, if your fire goes out and burns somebody else's property, Rahman al-Litzan, you're responsible for their property. But what happens if it burnt down a haystack, and in that haystack was a grand piano? For some reason, they were keeping their grand piano in a haystack. Are you responsible for what's called tamun ba'esh, which is hidden in fire, or not? Or do you say, no, it's only face value of what was destroyed? That's one way of viewing the question. The Gemara presents another option. The question was, the Philistines were hiding in the chelka, in the field. Can you burn down the haystacks? Do you have to repay the owner of the haystacks? Of course, you need to do that because it's life-threatening to get rid of your enemies. You know, we're talking about, you know, napalm in the good old days. This is the times of David HaMelech. Do you have to pay back the property of the people you destroyed the property for when it comes to a national effort? And in this, the Giborim returned and responded, and the Gemara explains that the response they gave to David HaMelech was, in fact, that David HaMelech had the right to. He was the king, and he was able to do this and not pay back. Whereas if another individual had done this, they could have saved themselves, but they would have to. Hamatzil atzmo b'chamom en chaveroi. If you save yourself with somebody else's money, you do have to pay back. That's what the Gemara says, and it concludes, halacha ve'en morin kein. This is a halacha, but we don't publicize this halacha, nonetheless. Very unusual. The Gemara sort of takes it completely out of its context of what the story is. One way of looking at this, one way of perhaps digesting this, is that it sounds like David HaMelech is asking a very simple question, and that is, at the end of everything, at the end of being a leader of Klal Yisrael, what he's saying is where is the realm of the individual? Where is the realm of the community? To what degree is the individual eclipsed in the community? To what degree does the individual have rights which are beyond the community? And what the men were saying to him is, David HaMelech, usually individuals do have rights in our society, but you as a king have the right to eclipse them, because that is your role. This is what David HaMelech is struggling here at the end of his life is to what degree is there a greater good? To what degree is the individual good? And when does the one trump the other? This is what one of the difficulties that David HaMelech is dealing with. What I'd like to put out there just for further thought is, where in David HaMelech's life has this come up? Where does David HaMelech talk about where he sacrifices? And David HaMelech explicitly talks about this elsewhere, where he talks about the fact that soldiers die in battle, that people, that the sacrifice of the individual for the sake of the klal. Why is David HaMelech rethinking it now? I leave that to you. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.